This is a Defocus Media production.
I want to know if you can say bonino, 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 bonino about five times really fast. Let's try. One, two, three. That was pretty good, but I'm going to bring up the guy who actually said that. The man from Punjabi Hockey. He came all the way from Vancouver to be here for this event here today, so he could say bonino, 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 bonino in person. Here he is.
Bonino, 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 Nick Bonino!
Another episode of the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to business, entrepreneurship, and life. I am your host, Dr. Harbir Syed. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here again to learn and to grow. This is a very, very special episode for a couple of different reasons. First of all, it is the 50th episode of the podcast. I'm so excited. I managed to get to the big 5-0. And to commemorate and celebrate this episode, I have a super special guest, somebody I've been wanting to track down for a while. And you know what? I think it was fate that we ended up having to wait to the 50th episode. I don't think I could have written it any better. Please welcome my guest, Mr. Harnarayan Singh, aka Ice Singh. And if you're not fully familiar with Harnarayan, he is a play-by-play commentator for NHL hockey games on Hockey Night in Canada. He has broadcast over 700 hockey games. He has received the Meritorious Service Medal by the Governor General of Canada. His goal call in 2016 of Bonino, Bonino, Bonino went viral and ended up landed him on stage in front of hundreds of thousands of people at the Stanley Cup Parade in Pittsburgh. We're going to hear a little bit more about that. He also happens to be the author of the national best-selling book, One Game at a Time, which has received incredible amounts of praise from iconic people like Ron McLean, Bob McKenzie, Kelly Rudy, Haley Wickenheiser, Cassie Campbell, and a bunch of other people. And it really is an amazing book. I could go on with a bunch more things, but I'll stop there. Thank you so much, Harnarayan, for joining me on the podcast. Truly so excited to have you. This episode is brought to you by Opria Group. Opria Group is a unique Canadian company that not only sells high-quality pre-owned optometric equipment at the fraction of retail prices, but they also build and design beautiful optometry clinics. Right now, you could save yourself thousands of dollars as Opria Group is offering $0 for design fees. You can also save 10% off already reduced prices on pre-owned equipment by using the code HS2020. That's right, you could save another 10% off. Use the code HS2020. You can connect with Opria Group on social media at Opria Group. You can also find them online at opriagroup.com, and you can email them at info@opriagroup.com. Now back to our episode with Harnarayan Singh.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for the kind intro. And I know you're right. This is a long time coming. I owe you one. It's been a crazy year for me, and but I'm excited to be on.
Absolutely. I had no issue waiting. I knew you were super busy, and I was excited. Every time we connected, you'd be like, I have this whole other thing that came up and I got all these people to meet. I was like, dude, that's amazing. That's so cool. So before we jump in, I'm going to say this a few times through the podcast, but Harnarayan has generously offered to give away 3 signed copies of the book. And what we are doing to create a little bit of a contest is leave a review on Apple Podcasts for this podcast. Just say you listened to this episode with Harnarayan, so I know that you'll be entered. And send me a screenshot of that review, because a lot of times when you put your little nickname on there, I don't know who it is. So either put your full name or send me a screenshot with your email address so I know who to connect with if you win the book. So we're giving away 3 signed copies of the book. Make sure you leave a review and you'll be entered into the contest for that. So, Mr. Singh, Ice Singh. All right. You know, there's not a lot of people who get to say that they are literally doing their dream job, living their dream job. You know, this is something you dreamt of as a child. You know, I wanted to be a professional soccer player as a kid. Unfortunately, I'm not doing that. What does that feel like for you to be able to say that that's what you do now?
it's really, really special. And I think as life goes on and, you know, the more people you meet and talk to and life experience, you realize how rare it is. And I knew from a very young age, my family tells me I was 4 years old when I was saying I wanted to be on Hockey Night in Canada. And I've got a grade six project where I had an autobiography and I wrote, I want to be a hockey commentator. And so, amazing. You know, like the seeds were planted when I was really young. And then eventually I was told it was such a long shot and that it was probably impossible for a number of reasons, you know, partly being from where I was in a small town in southern Alberta, and secondly, being a visible minority and wearing a turban and having a beard and all those things. Like I was just, there wasn't diversity on TV and radio back when I was growing up. And then also, especially in the world of sports, there wasn't, right? And so then it's when you don't have representation, then it seems impossible. And so, because of the fact that, you know, it really had to defy the odds to have this happen, it means a lot to me. I'm really grateful. And I know it's really special. Like, it doesn't feel like you're going to work, right? It's such a thrill to be doing it.
That's amazing. That's really amazing to hear. And I think that inspires me, I'm sure it'll inspire a lot of other people to hopefully pursue their dreams and their passions in that sense. But it wasn't obviously smooth sailing, and you already touched on it. You know, there were a lot of maybe naysayers. In fact, look, I want to, before I go on to that question, I have little tabs in here because I wanted to make sure I get open up to the right page so I can ask you the question. But, you know, the podcast, the purpose of this podcast is to inspire others, right? Share stories from people who have excelled or succeeded at certain tasks or their profession. So people in other professions can kind of take away, you know, insights and inspiration to hopefully excel at theirs. But one of the important things is to talk about the struggles and the twists and the turns and everything that come along the way. And, you know, there was that one little story that you mentioned here, somebody at CBC Radio, a producer that you looked up to, you know, specifically said, how about don't do sports because people like you don't get into sports, you know, do the news instead. And that's the same thing your family doctor said to you is also what you say there. So like you hear that kind of stuff, you know, at a young age, at an impressionable age, how do you internalize that? How do you deal with that? You know, because I know there's many others who are hearing things that are discouraging them along their path.
Yeah, you know, it's, I would say that we are so fortunate to be living in the best country in the world where it doesn't matter who you are, but those opportunities to have your dreams come true are available to us. A person like myself, how I look, who I am, what my faith is, I wear it on my sleeve, as is the saying. I'm not sure I would have been able to, you know, have this dream come to fruition in the United States. I certainly wouldn't have been able to in India. We see everything that's going on, persecution, oppression of minorities. There's everything going on in the Middle East. You look at the entire world, like Canada is a very unique society in the world where we have a long ways to go. And I can give example after example of why we have long ways to go. But in saying that, we still are an example to the world of how it can work. The fact that Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi even exists, it just shows the power of sports and how it can bring a country together and how it can bring people together. And it shows the beauty of multiculturalism, that we can celebrate each other's differences. So I would say to people who, you know, to naysayers out there, people who are feeling that they want to go for something and someone might be cautioning them, you know, if you feel you have it in you to go above and beyond, to work really hard, don't let anybody tell you that you have to change. Don't let anybody tell you that it's not possible. It is possible. And I'm living proof of that because of the fact that, you know, after paying for my own flights, after having, you know, done a lot of really crazy things, here I am. And, you know, I'm getting to do my dream job. You know, those people at in my workplace at CBC who were saying that, you know, there's probably not a chance for you on sports. If there's a chance for you on air, it would be news. Otherwise, you'd make a great producer behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Now, no disrespect to producers. They actually are the ones that make everything work. And they're the boss of the people who are on the air, right? But, you know, I wanted to give myself a shot on the air. That was my passion. And And, you know, I, even when I made it, you mentioned CBC, I had a colleague, I remember a veteran broadcaster who I was sitting with. And even when Hockey Night Punjabi had begun, he looked at me one day, nobody else was around. He's like, you know, the only reason you're part of Hockey Night in Canada is because of this Punjabi thing. Otherwise, there'd be no way somebody like you would be on Hockey Night in Canada.
Wow.
And when I was younger back then, initially, you know, you're kind of always just nervous about things. You're not as confident. You're not as comfortable in your own skin in the industry yet. I didn't even know how to react to him. Mm-hmm. You know, now I know, after reflection, after life experience, after everything we've gone through in the world in the last while, I would know to stand up for myself and defend myself and say, look, I've gone to school for this. I've studied radio and television. I've studied hockey. I know a whole bunch about it. And, like, you know, this is, I have experience as a broadcaster. So I'm actually very qualified to be on it. I'm not just a token, right? And there's been so many, you know, those kind of moments really just point to the ignorance that's still out there. And sometimes it surprises you the type of person who will say it, who you think is actually very intellectual and intelligent, and you know, they'll come across and say something to you that's quite hurtful in that way.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. But that's the kind of thing, you know, it can easily discourage somebody. You know, that would definitely hurt to hear somebody, again, maybe that you look up to or you consider to be, you know, a peer or even beyond that, and say something like that to you. That would be difficult. So the fact that you're able to deal with that is amazing, to continue to persevere and get to where you are. This is a bit of a different question. Do you ever feel like there's a bit of a maybe, for lack of a better term, a dark energy kind of within you, like where you take that and you say, okay, you know what? I'll show you. You know what? I know you're not that type of guy. You're a super nice guy, and you don't say anything like that in the book. But I always wonder if that motivates, you know, and I think it, I personally feel like successful people need to have a little bit of that to kind of get them through the tough times. So do you feel you have a bit?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's specific to each situation. I would say the people who have like blunt racism, racial slurs, and they're just, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know, I get things on social media like, oh, he better shave that terrorist beard off his face before, or I don't want my hockey coming to me from a guy in a turban. To those types of people, I feel that, where it's like, I'm going to do such a good job to prove you wrong. Or I'm sorry, you know what, I'm here, and you know, my employer wants me to be one of the faces of their company, and so, you know, screw it, if you have a problem with it, it doesn't matter. I'm, you know, the fact that I'm in this position proves you wrong, right? So there's a bit of that in there. But when it comes to like well-intentioned sometimes comments, like, you know, if I've gotten welcome to Canada, or you know, I've told some of these stories in the book too, and those ones are harder to take in that sense, because I don't feel, because it's almost like, wait a minute, I'm just as Canadian, or I'm so patriotic, like, you know, how can you just assume I'm new here, or you know, assume all sorts of things about my community. I would say, you know, I have struggled with confidence in the last while too, especially in the foray onto the English side in the last few years and things like that, and it's sometimes you have to really kind of be comfortable. I mentioned this before, being comfortable in your skin takes time. But that would be my message to other people out there, is that, you know, be proud of who you are, and don't change who you are for anybody else, right? And so those things are important. My faith, my family, those things have really kept me going. And if I always look at it that, you know, if I'm going through something that's a tough time, my ancestors, our history and our community, they went through extremely tough, hard times that are, you know, what I'm going through doesn't even compare. So that also keeps me going too. And I can even just look at my parents' generation, who came in the 60s. My great grandfather came in the early 1900s. Just stuff they went through is a lot more, you know, tough and challenging than what I've gone through. So And then if you look way back in our history, it's just unbelievable, right? So those types of things, you know, make me realize and put it into perspective that I have a lot to be grateful for.
For sure. Yeah. And perspective is always really important, you know, to help you kind of get through those things. So let's move a little further on in your career then. So you had those kind of naysayers earlier on. You were doing the internship at TSN, and eventually this opportunity to do Hockey Night in Punjabi comes up. And maybe I should give a little bit of a background story here. So for our friends who are in the U.S. or maybe who don't follow hockey, the big, big show in Canada is Hockey Night in Canada every Saturday. It's the one that, like, most Canadians are sitting down to watch hockey every Saturday evening, you know, and there's a couple of games on. It's nationally broadcast. And it was obviously always done in English, but also in French. So those are the two national languages, right? So always in English and French. But how, I don't know, sorry, how long has it been now? 15 years? Or
so since? 2008 was the very first year we did this.
13, 14. So yeah. Hockey Night, and then in 2008, somebody had the idea to do Hockey Night in Punjabi. So the same broadcast, but with Punjabi speaking commentators. And so that's where you came in. And more, you know, the thing that I want to, again, to share kind of the story, the struggle behind it, like, there was no budget for this production, right? You're doing this on your own dime, on a shoestring budget. So tell us a little bit about what that looked like, because you lived in Alberta and the show was produced in Toronto.
Yeah, and it's a four-hour flight from where I lived. And so initially, when CBC Sports, who was operating and managing Hockey Night in Canada at the time, which, as you described, it's an institution here. It's like, it's Monday Night Football in the States for NFL, but even bigger. You know, like, it's the be-all, end-all, cream of the crop hockey show, sports show in Canada. And so David Massey at CBC Sports at the time had this idea, like, let's do something multicultural, diverse, at a time when that wasn't even really as much of a buzzword as it is nowadays with diversity and inclusion. And so give CBC Sports for credit for picking up this idea and going forward with it. And so they tried a bunch of different languages, and none of them stuck except for Punjabi. And when Punjabi, when they started it, they were looking for commentators. And at the time, I was already a reporter with CBC Radio, but living in Calgary. And, initially it was what you would equate to like a pilot project or maybe even a one-off. And we called the Stanley Cup Final. That was the first game I ever called, was the Stanley Cup Final 2008. And it was just such a riot. It was like the media attention, the publicity, the positivity in Canada. It was, you could not have expected. It was just unbelievable, right? And it was such a success that CBC Sports and Hockey Night in Canada, they came back for at the beginning of the next regular season and said, let's make this a Saturday night doubleheader for the whole entire regular season. The only thing is, I had flown in from Calgary to Toronto, 4-hour flight to, basically across a good part of Canada to get there. And when they decided to do this as the entire regular season, they said, you know, there's really no budget for this show at all. We're just kind of doing it because it was great, and we're doing it out of our own existing budget. So we don't have anything to pay for your travel. Like, you did a great job, but I also knew, like, Toronto's a big city, and there's a lot, like, that is the epicenter of the hockey world. It's also the epicenter of the broadcasting world, whether it's news, whether it's sports in Canada. That's the place to be if you want to be in this industry. And I just knew that it would be so easy for them to find somebody else to do this if I didn't agree. So I just made this decision split second with my family's support. And we just said, don't worry, I'll be there. And we said, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out how to get you there. And so for the first few seasons of the show, I paid for my own flights. Like I mentioned before, I slept at the airport because if I'm already paying for my flights, I'm not going to pay for a hotel as well. And so, I would just call the games and come straight to the airport and try to find a bench and then take the earliest flight out. And I did that for a good few seasons of the show. And luckily, things have changed for me and for the better. But that's how it kind of started off. I was just willing to do whatever it was going to take to make the show successful and whatever it was going to take for me to be a part of it. Right. Those were the things. And my mom kept saying, Seva, this is Seva for the community, which is selfless service, one of the teachings in the Sikh faith. And so she's like, think of this as Seva for the community. It's such an, I felt that, like, we felt that the community, the Punjabi community, it almost validated their existence in Canada. Everybody felt more Canadian. It was like, yeah, we've made it, right? The Hockey Night in Canada is being broadcast in Punjabi. Like, how is there anything more cooler than that? And so that's why we just felt this was something that was so positive for the community. It's going to be positive for future generations, positive for the sport of hockey. And so just kept at it. And so, yeah, that's how it kind of began in 2008 with starting our own. Like, I started the social media all on my own, all the accounts, sending out messages to the community, emails, texts to say, like, this is where to watch. And very grassroots level to start it off.
That's incredible. Amazing that you did all of that yourself. And you said a few seasons you did that. Every Saturday, you know, for how long is a regular season plus the playoffs? How long are we talking, like 6 months?
Yeah, so that's 25, 26 regular season weekends. And then the playoffs, because at that time we were covering full series. So I was in for about two and a half months, I was in Toronto at that. So that during that stretch, during the playoffs, I had to find family, friends, and, you know, just room there and had a rental car. But during the regular season, it's about 25, 26 weekends of flying back and forth.
So you're talking like 6 months.
Time.
Yeah. 6 months. You're every Saturday morning, you fly into Toronto, you do the show, and then you end late. Go to the airport, find a bench, wake up first thing whenever the first flight is, and leave. You did that for 6 months every weekend. That's for three seasons. That's incredible. Like, again, the lesson there of like just sticking with it and doing whatever it takes to get to that goal that you have for yourself. Along the way, there was a funny story. It's like funny but sad, I suppose you could say, that, you know, at one of these airports you're staying, and you saw an icon, Bob Cole. So again, anybody who's not familiar, Bob Cole's kind of like the, who's an American announcer that we can compare him to?
There's Madden, there's Bob Costas, like basically Bob a Costas, legendary, like legendary broadcaster that everybody in the country knows who he is, and a face and a voice that's familiar to everybody, right?
So you had a little bit of a almost run-in with Bob Cole.
Yeah, so, so each of those seasons in Toronto that I was flying myself, like every season, something started to get a little better, whereas like, you know, okay, I found a family friend's place to start spending the nights on the weekend, or, you know, eventually when I kind of proved my commitment to the show, and I had a couple of people come stand up to bat for me and things. And then, you know, the flights started getting paid. And then eventually I think by like year four, I started getting, flights and a hotel too. So like, it was like in succession, little by little, things started to get better. And so that I'm at the hotel that's attached to, okay, actually I'm not saying, so in this specific situation, I actually don't have hotel room paid for yet. And so what I did is that because I was like, I had mapped out the whole Toronto International, Pearson International Airport, right? Like, which are the best bathrooms? What are the best benches? But eventually I figured out that there was a Sheraton Gateway Hotel attached to the airport. And in the lobby there, they had some really nice couches and furniture. And so I walked in kind of casually and gingerly, and so I got a spot on a couch. And so that's where I started trying to, I would kind of just hook my luggage to and try to hide my luggage, so that's no one in the working at the hotel would be like, who's this guy, right? And so one day from the corner of my eye, from kind of far away, I noticed there's Bob Cole. And Bob Cole is from Newfoundland, and he's been calling Hockey Night in Canada for decades already. He's, you know, he's the guy calling the Stanley Cup final at that time. Like, it is, it's a big, big deal. And I, of course, want to go up and talk to him. It's like, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning. And I don't know if he was grabbing a drink or if he was chatting with somebody else in the hotel lobby or one of those hotel lobby restaurants or whatever. But I just couldn't get up to talk to him. And the reason was like, how would I answer to him? Like, I had my luggage, my laptop bag all with me. It's like 2:30 in the morning or whatever it is. And like, we'd be like, oh, hello, hello. And then eventually the question would come up like, oh, are you staying here or what? And what would I say to him that, no, I'm just like sleeping at the airport trying to, waiting for 4 hours to pass till my flight. And, And so that just like I was embarrassed to be, if I just be blunt, like I was embarrassed about that. And so I didn't go up to talk to him because I felt like I didn't have an answer. Mm. I regret that now because it would have been a great way to start such a rapport with a guy who has such a great reputation. And, you know, maybe I could have learned a lot from him and stuff. But, and it was so rare to run into him because of the fact that he's calling games on Saturday night. I'm calling games on Saturday. Our paths aren't necessarily crossing because of wherever you're calling the games from, or, you know, if I'm in a studio or if he's at a different arena or whatever. Right. And so it was a rare opportunity, but missed because I didn't have enough courage to kind of just, you know, the reality of my situation. Yeah. I didn't want it to come across.
Well, I think that's personally, from my perspective, pretty understandable where you were, what you're doing. And I think at the time you were also not trying to let people know, the producers know, that you were doing all of this because they didn't want to say, oh, well, just find someone local. Right.
Yeah. I didn't want them to worry about like, oh, are you going to get here in time? Or are you going to, like, what happens if you miss a flight? Like, I had always planned that in advance, like to make sure that there's still other flights after mine if it got canceled, or, and if it was bad weather, I would figure it out, you know, okay, I'm going to go earlier, whatever, things like that. Right. But I just didn't want them to also think I was a lunatic, that who the heck does that? Like paying for their own flights to fly across for a show, a 1 day a week show that, you know, at the time I was not being paid much at all, because it just was what it was. Like, it was, there was no future plan for it at that time, right? Yeah. It was like we had to plant the seed to make it grow.
Yeah, but how many people would have said, you know, it would have been easy at that point to say, well, this, it's not really going anywhere, it's way too much hassle. So you probably were a little bit crazy, to be honest, but it was for a good reason. And I think I agree with what your mom said about as far as doing Seva for the community, because, you know, again, from my perspective, my family's perspective, and my friends and, you know, people that I know, everybody was just amazed by this whole process. And like, I can't believe how far everything's come in the past decade. Now, if we fast forward a little bit to 2016, I don't know if you like talking about this or don't like talking about this, because you've probably talked about it a million times. Okay. But what I'm going to do is, I'm going to cut it in here. I'm actually going to play that little clip, but you had this call. You don't have to do it now, 'cause I'm going to play the clip, right? But this goal call for Nick Bonino that just took off and, went viral in every sense of the word. In fact, you know, there's a couple of sports shows that I watch or listen to every single day. One of them is Around the Horn in the US, and even Around the Horn played it. And Around the Horn is a big show, you know, like well-known people on that show. And that was when I was like, wow, okay, something is happening here. And I would love for you to just tell me, like, what happened with the goal call, and then we'll kind of go from what all the craziness that came after that.
Just literally a blessing in disguise. I am so grateful I made the mistake of writing down a third line center. I wrote down Nick Bonino's name accidentally in my notes that I had printed out for left wing, center, and right wing. And there it was, Bonino, 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 right? And I remember my producer, my colleagues, like, I had even printed it out. Like, I had even put I do this thing where I have my notes and my peripheral vision is all ready to go. And I still was oblivious to it. Everybody pointed it out. We're like laughing, but like a minute before going to the air, I don't have like any time to reprint or rejig my notes or whatever. So it's just funny, right? Bonino, Bonino, Bonino. And lo and behold, during those playoffs, there's actually multiple Bonino, Bonino, Bonino goal calls, because he scored a whole bunch of goals that were big. They were series winners, game winners, like, just, you know, late in the game to tie it. He was doing everything. It was wild. And so the first Bonino, Bonino, Bonino goal call happened because of that mistake. And then Pittsburgh Penguins fans, like, they just ate it up. They loved it. We just had this cult following. They loved Hockey Night Punjabi. And then you go into the next round and it just kept like, it just kept skyrocketing, and they were asking for it. They were like, oh, if he scores a goal, you got to do it. And then in the Stanley Cup final, game one, it was just served on a platter for me. You know, the game's tied. There's 2.5 minutes to go. He's standing in front of the net. It's the game winner. And there it was. And then it just came out. And that's the one that really like took off and went viral all over the hockey world.
Nick Bonino!
it really brought Hockey Night Punjabi and myself to the mainstream stage. I think by that time in Canada, everybody knew what we were about and why, you know, why our show was needed. But I think in the rest of the hockey world, especially United States and everywhere else, Europe, like the Bonino call really brought us to the forefront, and it, you know, brought us into the more broad and greater hockey family.
Yeah. Wow. How amazing that a mistake. But, you know, it's one of those, like you said, it just sometimes little accidents are the things that lead you to these amazing findings, right? So tell me what happened, you know, if you can, sort of the short version of what did that lead to. Ultimately, the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup that year. And then what did you guys end up doing?
Yeah. So during the Stanley Cup final, as it was getting closer and closer to those elimination games, I was getting messages from the Pittsburgh Penguins. I had been interviewed like countless times from just, I can't even fathom how many media outlets had interviewed me. But a part of it was the Pittsburgh Penguins themselves. They were playing it on the Jumbotron. Apparently in Pittsburgh, wow. Like every radio station, every TV station, like I was being told by some of the Pittsburgh Penguins employees, one being Selena Pompiani, I talk about her in the book. She was the host for the Pittsburgh Penguins TV. So they're online and in arena broadcast host. And she was also saying, she's like, you have no idea how big it is here. Like, it's crazy. So she was like, are you able to come down if they win the cup? Can you come down for the Stanley Cup championship parade? And I was just like, what? And
wow.
So I remember talking to our producers about it and stuff. And they were like, well, what do they have planned for you? And I remember saying that, like, it doesn't even necessarily matter what they have planned, because like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Like, which broadcasters are, we're not even a home broadcaster for the Penguins or anything. Here we are, a show based in Canada for a niche community, and we're being asked to come be a part of their Stanley Cup celebration. I was like, and so my colleagues and I were like, whatever, we got to go. Like, we booked our flights, we show up there, and literally the Penguins rolled out the red carpet for us. Like, it was such an amazing tour we got. And then we eventually surprised the Pittsburgh Penguins in the dressing room with the Bonino call. Wow. This is after they've won the Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup's in the dressing room. They're getting ready to take their Stanley Cup picture. The team's just cheering, celebrating with us. We're invited on the ice to celebrate with them with the Stanley Cup when they're getting their picture taken. And then from there, the Stanley Cup dinner for the players, the ownership, the management, their families were a part of that. And like meeting Mario Lemieux and meeting the coach of the Penguins and having them say, you know, I remember Mario Lemieux first putting out his hand and then he pulls me in for a hug and he goes, you're a part of Pittsburgh Penguins history. And and then, you know, the coach saying that, oh, we played your guys' goal calls to amp up our team in our video sessions. It was beyond anything you could imagine, right? It's like, it's beyond your wildest dreams. It is the closest you can get as a broadcaster to actually kind of like winning a cup or being a player, right, on a championship team. So just wild stuff that we'll never, ever forget.
And that honestly, every time I read or hear the story, it's amazing to me. It's my
The chapter in the book is called "They're Here," because when we landed in Pittsburgh, there was like tweets, people taking the pictures of like the backs of us saying "They're here," and we're like, "What?"
Wow.
Like, it was just, it's nuts, right? So yeah, that's one of the more. I've had some people from the Penguins organization tell me that when they got their copy of the book, they skipped over to and they started with that chapter and then the other ones after because they were excited to read about it.
People were taking a photo of you and tweeting, "They are here." Like, that's something you would say to like Mario Lemieux arriving, like, "He's here." They're doing that for you guys. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And now, right, so because of all of these things that you've done, sleeping in the airport and making amazing goal calls, you're actually broadcasting on the English side of Hockey Night in Canada. So Hockey Night Punjabi is sort of the offshoot, separate brand, but under the Hockey Night in Canada umbrella. But now you're on the real, full-on, that institution, that Monday Night Football, you're on that. So how does that feel for you?
It's hard to put into words. It is it's so incredible. I mean, I've been wanting this for so long, and I didn't know if this day was going to come. I, you know, after the Bonino call, I was asked to be on the English side in terms of a host capacity. So I would be doing ringside reporter role, or, you know, when the game's about to start, you kind of set the scene and then you do player intermission interviews. And so from 2016 till 2020, I got to do that. And actually in 2020, when the pandemic hit and then the NHL had to go on a pause, and then when they had their return to play and their playoffs, I ended up being geographically in the right spot in Alberta, and one of the hockey bubbles they had it where the players were all in, and they were in Edmonton. And because I was close by and I was one of the hosts, I got to do three rounds of the playoffs in that role too, which was pretty amazing. But I've always known, and I've communicated this as well a lot too, my employers, that, you know, like, while I appreciate that role, like, I just feel like I can, you know, the play-by-play aspect is something that I've done so much in on the Hockey Night Punjabi side, and that's kind of my forte, and that's where I'm, that's what I'm most passionate about. And but you just never know if that day is going to come. And then when I got the phone call, it just happened so quickly that, okay, are you ready? Now's the time. And it was just, it was crazy, because the season started in January, and my first game, I probably found out about 4 days beforehand, 4 or 5 days beforehand or something like that. And you know, the game I'm calling isn't in my city. I'm figuring out the travel and all that, but you're also figuring out your prep. I'm going to be working with new producer, new colleagues, all sorts of stuff. Right. And it's just a little bit different workflow, different expectations, higher stage. And then there's the nerves, right? You know, as I mentioned, I fight some issues confidence wise. And so, that first game, it was good to get that under my belt. I know, like, I know I was a nervous wreck, and I'm just like, since January up until now, and it's been such a, thankfully, an upward trajectory for me, because I've put in a lot of time, effort, hard work, and trying to just learn as much as possible, trying to improve, just, and it's a comfort thing. Like, I was comfortable doing this in one language for 13 seasons, 700 plus games. You get comfortable there. Your brain's wired to call a hockey game and with using specific vocabulary. And it's a little bit of a battle, right? So there's all these kind of things at play behind the scenes. And but the goal calls are some of the things that I have the most fun with. And so eventually, as the season went on, I started getting more and more comfortable. And by the end of it, like, I was assigned playoffs, which is just beyond me, such a thrill. And it's crazy to think, like, the playoffs is where I felt the most comfortable, where I felt the most like I was being myself. And I felt as close as I've ever felt to calling, you know, the comfort level that I have on the Punjabi side to the English side. So it's been a process, but it's been fun as well. And it, like, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Before I forget, I want to make sure I mention this a couple more times. We're giving away a few copies of the signed copies of the book, One Game at a Time, which, you know, we've touched on a few of the stories in the podcast now, but there's so many other cool stories as well as, stuff that we won't have time to get into, but Harnarayan talks a lot about, like, his upbringing, you know, the Sikh faith, and the fact that you're a rock star musician also, which I'd love to tell people more about. But, you know, the best way, how you can enter to win a book is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I just decided now, as we're talking, it's June 3rd as we're recording this. So we'll leave it open for 1 month. So till the end of June, if you hear this podcast at some point along the way, make sure you leave a review, send me a screenshot, whether it's on Instagram or email me or whatever it is, and we'll enter you in, and Harnarayan will send you a signed copy. All right, guys, I wanted to give another quick shout out to our friends at Opria Group. Now, if you happen to be a medical professional who's not an optometrist, you should check out their sister company, Medico Construction. Medico builds and designs beautiful offices for dentists, medical doctors, veterinarians, and all sorts of other medical professionals. So if you're looking for someone to help design your practice, reach out to Medico Construction. You can find them on social media at team.medico, and you can email them at info@medicoconstruction.com. And again, back to our episode with Harnarayan Singh. And I will use that as a point to change the topic of conversation. So one really important topic, it's a pretty heavy topic, but I really wanted to make sure we touched on this. You already did a little bit earlier on, alluded to you know, we've come a long way, but there's a long way for us to go still. There's a story in the book that I thought was so poignant. You know, of course, you've worn a turban. In fact, it's actually kind of funny how young you were when you wanted to start wearing a turban. I love that. But like, you've been wearing a turban since you were very, very small. And back in that day, in those days, now we're talking, you know, 30 years ago or whatever it was, the perception of that in a small town in Alberta, of course, like predominantly white area, you know, the perception of a kid wearing a turban might not have been the same. It's not the same as what it is now. And, you know, you tell a story about being bullied, and that's one thing we'll touch on. But the specific thing I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about is there was a kid who actually stood up for you at that time. And I really felt proud of that kid. I was like, yes, this guy, he's helping him out, you know. But then we fast forward a very, very significant time for everybody. And maybe it's not as well known how significant it was for the Sikh community, but 9/11 happened in 2001. So if you could tell me kind of a little bit, just, you know what I'm alluding to. If you can kind of tell me a little bit about what happened there and what your experience was.
Yeah, for sure. So in a small town, you end up going to school with the same crop of students from kindergarten all the way to high school, right? And you get to know these kids and their families pretty well. That's the beauty of a small town. And so one of the, you know, when I was younger, obviously in school, showing up with a turban, and, you know, we spoke Punjabi at home, we're vegetarian, we listened to different music, and we, it's just, you know, you're an outsider. My name is 10 letters long with four vowels. Like, I knew I was an outsider, right? Like, no one needed to point that out to me, but there obviously are kids who do point that out to you. And I would say in elementary, it was kind of curiosity, right? There's a lot of curiosity. I was always answering questions about my appearance and the differences. And some of the boys who were bigger and stronger, and, you know, who played ice hockey more than I did, one of them went out of his way to, I think I would never have been friends with this guy had it not been for my passion for hockey. And I think he thought it was cool that I knew so much about hockey. I'm always wearing hockey sweaters and shirts and talking about it. And so, you know, because of that, he used to say, you know, if someone gives you a problem, let them know they have to come through me. And that made me feel good too, right? And I had that in my earlier years of elementary school. But then, you know, things change as you grow up. And so junior high, I started having some more blunt bullying and had some moments, some pretty crazy moments that stand out where, like, I was tackled or singled out, or, you know, a bully just kept continually finding different ways to give me traumatic experiences. And so, you know, that's part of it. And then in high school, you mentioned 9/11. So I'm in high school at the time. And on that morning, it's like New York City, just such a tragic event there. And you think, what does it relate to the town of Brooks, Alberta? But, you know, you have the images of bin Laden, and, you know, very small part of the Muslim faith. They wear turbans. And so it's not everybody, but then there's different styles, and, like, you know, the world is not educated about this type of thing, right? You just see any sort of religious headwear, a symbol, and you just make these assumptions. And that's what happened to me. Is I'm walking alone in my high school in a hallway, concrete walls, and this guy, taller than me, stronger than me, grabs me from my throat out of nowhere. He's choking me and he's holding me, slams me against the wall, the concrete wall, and he's holding me up. And this is the same kid that I knew in elementary school who was willing to protect me. And this is the same kid saying tons of racist, hateful words and swearing and just spewing vicious hatred words at me and saying, like, I can't believe you guys did this. Go back to where you're from. How can you do this to us? And it's like, buddy, and I'm trying to, like, get him off me, right? And trying to get his hands off my throat and trying to push him away. Meanwhile, I'm trying to croak out words saying, like, I have nothing to do with this. Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, we've known each other for, like, almost over, like, not almost, like, at that time it'd be over a decade. Our families have known each other. Like, we've been to each other's houses. Like, what are you talking about? And it was such an eye opener for me. And I instantly realized at that moment that things had not only changed for me, but they had changed for the entire community. And like within days, we heard about in Arizona, the sick gentleman who was, he had a gas station. He's just outside his gas station sweeping the floor, and he's just shot point blank. And we started hearing all these stories about hate crimes and murders and just crazy stuff. And I just knew at that moment that this is completely changed everything. And airport security for me changed so much. And like, just, it was just nuts. Right. Like, and I knew like, okay, now when I'm walking around on the street and I'm, you know, we're the only family in Brooks with turbans and who look the way we do. And if someone in my high school who I've known for over a decade is going to have that type of reaction, I can't trust anybody anymore. You don't know what's going to flip a switch for somebody and all of a sudden they're going to turn on you. And it taught me a lesson about humanity that was a really hard lesson to learn, right? That it hurt, right? And it hurts to this day. And you know, like, but my parents, like a number of years ago before the book, I was asked to write for the Players Tribune, and I was asked by the co-writer who kind of worked with me on it. We talked about at length about all sorts of experiences, and when it was decided that this was a really strong one to include, my parents pleaded with me that I shouldn't put the kid's name in there, and that, you know, people change or you never know, and like, you know, it's not. And so, and they made me kind of basically vow or promise to them that I'll never say this kid's name out in public. We don't want to cause any family or somebody issues or whatever, right? That. And so I've respected that, but I know who he is, who he was and who he is and stuff like that. But it's still shocking, you know, even when I talk about it, that someone could turn on you like that. And then it also, now I'm learning that it speaks to maybe what some of the upbringing is or what some of their friends circle or what their kind of, you know, what those viewpoints are. And it just gets downloaded into kids, right? So if a high school kid can react like that, then obviously they've downloaded some sort of misinformation, or they have people they know who have viewpoints that are full of hatred and ignorance of amongst others. There's so many people out there, Herbier, who say, oh, this doesn't happen anymore, or oh, I thought the world had changed. It happens. Ethan Bear, an Edmonton Oilers player, just last week when the playoffs, when he made one mistake in the game, and you know, he was just, the amount of racism he received, I received racism calling the playoffs, and like, it happens. It's not that it's, you know, I've heard so many people say that, oh, I didn't think this happened anymore. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's a wake-up call. Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah, well, that's such an incredible story. It's an upsetting story, but you know, lessons to be learned from that. And I, you know, one thing we were sort of saying is there are clear indications that we've come a long way. We've made a lot of progress. I mean, look at you on national television, national broadcast. Like, that is a symbol of progression. You are a symbol of progression. But there's a lot of other stuff that, you know, that tells us, okay, we're not there yet, you know. You know, we don't need to get into details of the different racist things, but I'd love to, you know, from your perspective, what kind of things would you like to see that would show you that we're continuing to grow or making more of a change in this direction of inclusion? And again, like you said, D&I is such a, you know, catchphrase these days, popular term. What do we need to see?
I think it's going to take leadership from corporations and big companies, and it's going to have to take leadership from the majority. And you got to have allies from other communities, right? Like, people who are Caucasian, people who are in positions of power to make these decisions, to help create more diversity and inclusion, and to help create more representation within their companies, within their workforce. That's going to be big, because it's going to be, without that, you know, we can't fight this fight ourselves. We can't change perspectives just ourselves as our community alone. We need some help. And, you know, like, for example, you're talking about with me, in my position now, and credit to Sportsnet for making these decisions. There's so many more women this season who have been on the hockey broadcast. It's amazing to see. And I'm seeing that from my 5-year-old daughter's eyes now, right? Like I see that the power of representation, you know, when she was started watching hockey, when she was younger, like, you know, when she was between the ages of 3 and 4, she wasn't seeing as many examples. And it was weird because I was seeing when we're playing hockey at home, mini sticks or on the driveway or whatever, she was choosing to be, I'll be the coach or it's okay, I'll be the referee. And I didn't realize like why she was doing that until I saw her reaction when she saw girls participating in the NHL All-Star game. And that look on her face, and I'll never forget that moment. And then I realized like, this is so important. And now she's seeing more women commentators and her face lights up when she sees that, or she hears a woman voice talking about hockey and then seeing women hockey players. You know, all of a sudden now she feels like, oh, it's that she can be a player too when we're playing, right? It's just, it's such a small thing, but it gives you the indication that now there's that barrier has finally been broken, that, you know, she doesn't have to grow up worrying that she doesn't have a place in the game. The same way people who are wearing turbans from the Sikh faith, like I've had other young kids in high school come up to me and say that they never thought that they would have a spot in they're huge hockey fans, but they never thought they'd have a spot in hockey media. But because of what we're doing with Hockey Night Punjabi, they, and just the success recently with me being on the main stage too, they feel like they have a shot. And so they've started social media accounts following their favorite teams. They've started hockey podcasts and, you know, they've had me on as guests and they've made me emotional because they're telling me how much it means to them to see me on there. And it's just so, you need to have people in place of power ready to take a stand and to make these decisions to put diverse people in place. And that's going to make a big difference going forward. And it's not easy for them too, because they receive backlash, right? There's all this there. A lot of times some companies are worried about, oh, we're just going to be labeled as doing the token thing. Well, it has to be done, right? Like Canada, the face of Canada has changed. And so let's have our companies, our workplace, let's have everything else represent what Canada actually looks like.
Yeah, that's a really great answer there. I think we do need help. And I think over time, as we start to see more representation, that will inspire, it will help educate the masses a little bit more on what our country actually looks like, and then inspire other younger people to kind of work for those positions as well. Yeah. Okay, so to wrap up the podcast, there's always two questions that I like to ask every guest. And we'll ask you those now. The first of those two questions is, if we could hop in a time machine and go back to a point in your life where maybe you were having a difficult time, you could share that moment if you like, but more importantly, what advice would you give to yourself at that time?
Yeah, I'll go back to a moment I talked about when a veteran reporter said that to me, that the only reason I was a part of Hockey Night in Canada was because of Punjabi, and otherwise there'd be no way somebody like me to be part of Hockey Night in Canada. If I were to go back in time, I would have stood up to that person and I would have said that what you're saying is it hurts. You know, and what you're saying is not right, and you're just making these comments because of how I look and because I'm different from you. And underlying, it's a mic. I didn't know what this was at the time, but now I know what microaggressions are. Mm-hmm. And those types of things are microaggression racism, right? Because it's like, you shouldn't be saying that. Anybody can be qualified or capable of doing any job. Doesn't matter how they look or where they're from or what their heritage is. So I would have gone back and handled that very differently and put that person in their place. Mm-hmm. And I never did, but I didn't realize I would carry that with me for the rest of my life too, that being a moment that sticks out, right? So that's what I would have handled it differently.
Yeah, hopefully the consolation of you being able to pass that forward to somebody and giving them the ability to stand up for themselves, hopefully that will be enough, you know, for you to feel better about that. The last question that I like to ask every guest: everything that you've accomplished to this point, how much of it would you say is due to luck and how much is due to hard work?
I'm going to give all the credit to my faith, a lot of prayers, a lot of time doing seva, and a lot of just, you know, being focused on that. And I think this whole thing has been such a gift, and it's kind of like all the time that I put into that and was fortunate to put into that. You know, this was kind of this dream and this real big hope that I had, and I was praying for it. And I got to give credit to my faith and to Waheguru, the creator, for, and my family, for just being there to help me. And, you know, that's how it all happened. Like, I don't think anybody would have ever been able to predict that Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi would even be something that someday would exist before it happened. I don't think anybody, this was not on the horizon. This was not in anybody's predictions. This was just something that was such a gift, and I'm so grateful for it, not only for what it's done for me, but for the entire community, for my colleagues and for Canada. And so that's what I got to give credit to.
That's great. That's a great answer. I love it. So once again, we're wrapping up. Don't forget, leave a review and we will put you, enter you into a contest to win a signed copy of the book. So make sure you leave a review on Apple Podcasts and send me a screenshot with your name so I know who you are. Thank you so much for everybody tuning in and listening. Don't forget to take a screenshot, post it on Instagram. Let me know what you think. Don't forget to, you know, hit subscribe, hit like, and all of those things. And I'm actually going to hand it back over to Harnarayan to wrap up. He has this incredible announcer voice that we haven't even touched on yet. I want you to, if you wouldn't mind, let me first say thank you so, so, so much for joining. And I'm super excited to get this podcast out there, but I'll let you wrap it up.
You've been listening to the 50th episode of the 2020 podcast with Dr. Harbir Sayan. Thanks and have a great day.